I regret the wrong, and I'll die in America.
Welcome to our group.
And this whole show is right here.
Hey! Sorry. The fuck was that? Beethoven. Who's that?
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our Medical Tuesday broadcast with your host, our Colonel Kimberly Purvis. Now, for those of you new just tuning in to us, be sure to check out our national Facebook page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7. Now, before you hit that join button, just know we expect all of our members and future members to participate throughout all we do here in the Defenders 7. Check out and subscribe to our website, all lowercase letters, www.defender7.com. On our website, you'll find we have a store and a donate button. 100% of all sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities throughout all 50 states in the time of need. So please, by all means, purchase something or hit that donate button. That's the only way we are able to do what we do for our community. Be sure to go over and hit that subscribe button on our YouTube channel. We're on MeWe. Click on Communities, scroll down. Defender 7, Humanitarian American Patriot Group. That's right, folks. We are not a militia. Now, for tonight's show and all the shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we enjoy it when you call in and participate. And that number to call, 914-205-5773. Now, for those of you that are shy, we also have a chat room right here on Blog Talk that is also live during our broadcasts. So either way, call in or talk to us on our chat room. Always welcome, everybody. Trying to get this out. We go nationwide and global at all times. Come on in, support us, support the shows we bring to you. Now, without further ado, I turn the microphone over to your host, our Colonel, Kimberly Purvis.
Howdy, howdy.
Heidi.
Who's Stephanie yelling at?
She was yelling at the dog.
Oh, okay. I could hear her cussing at the, whoever it was. I almost thought, well, damn, someone's in trouble. Any of the slackers on?
I'm on.
So, We actually finished pain management last week, Bobby. I'm just so tired and been working so much. I don't even know if I'm coming or going right now. Shit.
It don't matter.
I don't, man. Last Saturday, well, Friday I worked until 5:30, did class, did paperwork, finished my paperwork in the morning Saturday, went to the Veterans Expo, and then was on call 5 o'clock Saturday, and I did get called out at 8:30, and I didn't get home until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, shit.
On call. Yeah. And then I got up Sunday morning, went to church, came home, and was on call again, and got called back out again at 8:30, but it was only one call, thank God.
Are you trying to see the weather?
Huh?
I said, are you trying to compete with weathers of working?
I don't know, man. I'm freaking...
6-12 hour days.
It's been one of those things, and then, like, well, Monday, it wasn't too bad. I only had 2 people on Monday, and then school started. Oh, shit. And then I've been just doing all this bullshit English and, you know, all these new English rules they've come up with. And I'm like, man, it wasn't broke. Why even bother, you know? And we got math this week. Oh, joy. So, anywho, I thought we would do the stages of grief.
Subliminal messages.
Huh?
They even have some pain management.
I feel like I pulled my
back muscle. So anyway, I was thought we would do the stages of grief and then what to expect at end of life. I wanted to start the hospice thing, but trying to get the branch manager not busy is like impossible. So I'm going to start it this week and hopefully by next week, she won't be on call. As soon as we get enough people, I swear to God, everyone's like, I want to go on vacation. So I'm like, piss off, people. That's why I've been working so much overtime or on call a lot. This coming Saturday, I'm not going to do a show. I'm going to let you know ahead of time. I'm going to disappear. I'm going to leave Saturday morning, and I'm going to pick a state near you. I don't know. I'm just going to go for a drive and drive until I get tired and stop. And then spend, you know, what, a half a day wherever I'm at, and then spend the night and then come home because I can.
South Carolina.
I'm freaking tired. Huh?
South Carolina.
Okay, that's too damn far. As long as it's within 6 to 8 hours, I'm good.
You sissy.
No, dude, I got a weekend. I've got one weekend, man. What am I supposed to accomplish? It took me 16 hours to get to Knoxville because it's 1,000 miles away. So, yeah.
Well, I'm shorter than 16 hours.
Huh?
I'm shorter than 16 hours.
Not from Kansas, you are. You're further. No, I just need that. My brain hurts and I'm tired, and I just can put the dogs in the car, and we're just gonna drive. Just drive. Probably go to Nebraska. I've never been there. You know, I'm trying to pick off the states I haven't been to. So that's all I'm going to do. Before we get started, though, all I gotta say is, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, what the hell is this world coming to? So the judge that signed off on the FBI search warrant was Jeffrey Epstein's attorney.
Yeah. Well, they say he worked specifically for Epstein, and I'm like, so fucking what? He was still part of the Epstein debacle. You know, he's still a creep.
Yeah.
It's disgraceful. It's all about.
But here's the thing. All the information that they took from Mar-a-Lago is now federal property, and now they have to disclose everything they took. I don't think they understood what they took. So I don't think they thought that plan through. And everyone's like, yeah, she's going to jail. No, he's not. No, he's not. That's just all of his presidential shit, but I guarantee you there's the Hunter Biden's shit, all the dirt he's got on all of the elites and all of them. So we shall see what happens with all of that.
Oh, I'm sure they'll come up with some excuse.
Oh, yeah.
Because let's face it, they didn't get it for the reason they said. That was just an excuse. They're hoping to find something on Trump to arrest him on.
Oh, yeah. But they're not going to.
No, I know they're not.
So everyone knows that there are 5 stages of grief. Well, apparently there's 7 now. And they've got there's the 5 stages, which is DAFDA, and I'm going to go through all of that here in a minute. And then now they have a whole new set of 7 stages. But I think they work hand in hand. So I thought we'd go over that. So grief is universal.
They probably developed new ones for the Karens.
No. The other 7 stages is I kind of briefly read over it, but anyway, everybody experiences grief at some point in your life, and it doesn't necessarily have to mean an illness. It can mean an accident, a traumatic event. It could be a divorce, losing your job. Everything has grief to it. Everything. You could have lost your dog. Your favorite sports team could have lost. That's grief. You gotta deal with it. Everything has grief in it, and there's the stages of grief. So it's very personal for everybody. But you have to go through each of the stages in order to get to the final result of acceptance. So some people can cry, become angry, withdraw, feel empty. But none of those are, they're not wrong, because those are natural feelings. Actually, before we get going, I also want to look up one thing real quick before. Because something that when I went through my cognitive behavior therapy, there's a whole wheel of emotion, and there's actually only 6 basic emotions. Everything else that's not on this list is man-made. Typical to be man-made.
I didn't know there were that many emotions. Wait, what are the emotions? I didn't realize.
Well, let me go through the stages of grief, and then we'll go through the 6 types of emotional emotions that people go through. So here's the thing about grief. You can go from the first stage, the second, the third, back to stage one, two, three, two, three. You can go back and forth.
Right.
But you have to work through each stage. And you can't rush it. There's no point. You just can't rush going through the stages. So in 1969, a Swiss-American psychiatrist named Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote in her book on death and dying, and I'm also going to go on that also, into that also. It's important for people to understand the dying process as well. Her observations came from years of working with terminally ill individuals, and her theory of grief became known as the Kubler-Ross model.
Oh, I know.
If you've taken any psychology class, you've heard of Kubler-Ross.
Yes, yes.
And all of them. So while it was originally devised for people who were ill, these stages of grief have been adapted for other experiences of loss. Like I said, it's not just the death of a loved one or whatever. It could be for anything.
Right.
So it's called DABDA, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. You have to go through each of those stages. So stage one is denial. Grief is an overwhelming emotion. It's not unusual to respond to the strong and often sudden feelings by pretending the loss or change isn't happening. Denying it gives you more time to gradually absorb the news and begin to process it. And this is a common defense mechanism, and it helps numb you to the intensity of the situation. As you move out of denial, however, the emotions you've been hiding will begin to rise. And so you'll be confronted with a lot of sorrow that you've denied. And so we're going to start with, there's four different scenarios. A breakup or a divorce. Now, what one person will say to the other, oh, they're just upset. They'll get over it tomorrow. No, he's not coming back, or she's not coming back. A job loss. You could lie to yourself and say, oh, it's just a mistake. They didn't mean it. They'll call me back tomorrow. A death of a loved one. She's not gone. She'll come around the corner any second. The thing about the death of a loved one, depending on the death, hits you differently. A lot of times with an illness, you have time, all of the stages, and I'm not saying it's any easier because it's not, but you know it's coming. Now, if your friend or loved one or whoever dies in a traumatic accident, car accident, I don't care. Anything traumatic, a heart attack, a stroke, anything.
No,
suicide, there's no warning.
Right.
So everything is thrown at you all at once, and it's like you have to deal with it that way. So, you know, those types of instances, they make it a lot harder. A terminal illness diagnosis. Like my brother, he's 50 now. He was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer at 49, and just out of the blue. You know, he's dealing with it better than our mother is. But then again, as a mother, you don't want to look at your child that they're going to die. You know, and I'm sure that you guys feel the same way. Every parent feels that they should die before their child. It's the natural order of things, you know. Step two is anger.
Yeah, I agree, you know, giving forewarning. From personal experience, I've had people die instant, you know, unexpectedly. And I've had people die where, you know, I was expecting it. And the both, you have a grief for both, it's actually easier, in my opinion, to deal with one where you had warning. Because you have a longer period of time. Because you can do it while there's still a lot. It really does make it easier. Because you get to say goodbye.
It makes the blow easier, but it's not, in a sense, depending on who it was. Because if it's your spouse, your child, your parent, it depends on how close you were to the person.
Again, I'm not saying it's not hard. I'm just saying that.
No, I know.
You know, personal experience. It for me, it was easier to handle the loss of someone who I got to say goodbye to. That, you know, we got to do things than somebody who was unexpected.
See, some of the things that we deal with in hospice is, you know, we get people who are cold codes on hospice. Now, they know they have a terminal illness. They know they're dying, but they're still a full code. So our job is to go in there, into the helm, and discuss with the family exactly, and that's one of the stages of dying. And it's hard. We've got one now that he's actively dying, and he's still a full code. And they made him a DNR, and now he wants to rescind it. And so one of the nurses had to sit there and go over every single thing with them. And when you break it down, it's quality of life over quantity. If you can't take care of yourself, if you can't function, then, you know, so.
I agree. I want quality, not quantity.
Yeah. So stage two is anger, where denial may be considered a coping mechanism. Anger is a masking effect. Anger is hiding many of the emotions and pain that you carry. Fear may be redirected at other people, such as the person who died, your ex, your old boss. You may aim your anger at inanimate objects, and that's why people throw shit. Let me tell you something. Depending on what or who you're throwing it at, honestly, the way I've dealt with anger, batting cages, I've taken my gun to a range and shot everything and just emptied it. I've thrown candles. I've thrown glass. Just, you know, random shit. But you're throwing it away, and so you're getting out that frustration. So who am I to say that when you get angry and you go through the anger stage that you just have to yell?
Right.
Some people don't yell. Now, a lot of times, this is the biggest thing.
You literally just yell?
Huh?
You mean they recommend literally just yelling?
Well, yeah. That's how people cope with anger. Some people do. Who's to say how you're going to deal with anger?
True.
You've got to get it out. You know what? I don't know about anybody else. I angry cry. When I get so mad, I can cry because you can't process it, and so I cry.
Yeah,
and it doesn't mean boo-hoo, I'm upset. No, I'm pissed, and that's the only way to get it out. But I also feel better because you're releasing those toxins that's in your body.
I never thought of it that way. That makes sense. I never thought of it that way, but that makes sense. I don't cry too much when I'm upset or sad, but if I get mad, I do because I guess because you're not sure how to process it because you don't want to get violent, you know. So if that's what you do, and you know, yeah, that makes sense.
Now, I don't mean go out and punch a wall, punch a car. Because it doesn't work that way. I mean, you don't want to get hurt. You don't want to get hurt. Now, I will say, funny story, ha-ha. I'm sorry, I laughed my ass off when this happened. My ex-boyfriend decided, in his brilliant wisdom, take a golf club to his car because we were it broke down for the last time. And so we went and got him a newer truck. Well, he wanted to take the golf club, and we actually put targets on the car, and we shot it and took a baseball bat. Well, that jackass took his golf club and swung and hit the mirror. And it didn't end too well because the end of the golf club ricocheted off the car and came back and stabbed him.
Ooh.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. It went 4 inches into his arm, the whole shaft of the club. Now, did I make sure he was okay first? Yes, I did. Did I laugh my ass off afterwards? Yes, I did. So, like I said, if you're going to be angry, make sure you're not going to get hurt.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Also, here's the thing. Have you ever stopped to think of why someone becomes an atheist? I know this has nothing to do. Actually, it does.
They get mad at God. They blame God for whatever happened.
Exactly. And you know what? Here's the thing. It may not be the death of a loved one. They can blame God because they got fired. They lost their job. They lost their car, their home. Well, why did God let this happen? God didn't let it happen. And that's what,
right.
And this is what I had to, what I told my mom and my brother with his diagnosis. And I've told other people this. Yes, you may have prayed to have them healed. Well, just because they died, it didn't mean they weren't healed. They were
right.
healed. So I took them home, and they were
right.
healed that way. And so with that conversation with people.
I don't pray for people to get better or to get healed. I pray for them to have the strength to take whatever it is that God gives them, whether it's a healing or,
with something else that I do. And it keeps, when I talk, they usually can, and it helps get them through that stage. But what I will pray for someone, and this is the thing I say, is, God, it's your will. If it's your will for them to be healed and to continue on earth, or if it's your will for them to go home.
Correct.
So it's in his hands. And a lot of people understand that. And so, that I just, because we watched God's Not Dead and, what's his face? Shit. I can't think of what his name is now. To save my life.
Kevin
the Sorbo? Professor there.
Kevin Sorbo?
Yeah. How angry he got because his mom died. And see, that's what happened.
Right.
He never processed that. See, if
right.
you don't process, you blame everybody else, especially if you get fired from a job or your spouse divorces
right.
you. It's a two-way street.
Right. No, I agree.
When something in, So, but I don't agree with this one statement. Not everyone will experience the stage of grief. I don't believe, I believe you have to go through it.
You do.
Here's the thing.
Look different, but you go
You may be
it.
In that stage a few hours, a few days, and boom,
mm-hmm.
you're on to the next stage. So
right.
not every, depending on what it is, will
mm-hmm.
depend on how long you're in that stage.
Right.
So
no,
as your anger subsides, you may begin to think more rationally about
mm-hmm.
what's happening and feel the emotions you've been pushing aside. So these are just some things for the anger. A breakup or divorce. I hate him. He'll regret leaving me. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. You have to stop and think, how much better off are you without that person? Never take the blame for a relationship ending. It's a mutual thing. It's a two-way street. Everything's a two-way street. So, you can, by saying he'll regret or she'll regret it, yeah, you can feel that way. Of course you can. Because especially if you were the one constantly working on that relationship, right? And they're like, no, I think this person over here is better. Well, listen, the grass ain't always greener over the septic tank. It just smells worse.
I think part of it is I I statement. I think if you can do an I statement, you know, like you said, you're saying things are a two-way street. You can't blame everything that takes place on the other person. It doesn't matter what the relationship it is, parent, sibling, spouse,
now,
whatever. You know, like you just said, I think that helps. If you can accept some of the responsibility, whatever word you want to use, for what's happening, of course, unless it's death. I mean, you don't accept responsibility for somebody dying. But like a divorce or a loss of a job, if you can put an I statement in there, I think it helps to deal with it. You know what I mean? Because then you're not pushing all the – but then you have to forgive. You have to forgive the person, and you have to forgive yourself. But, again, if you don't have those I statements, you can't forgive yourself.
Now, look at this generation. Half the millennials, and look at all of Gen Z. Do you know why this generation, they have no idea about the stages of grief? Because, one, they can never accept responsibility. Everything is everybody else's fault. So this is one main reason why this whole generation is jacked up. And so
I didn't thought of that.
Because they don't accept responsibility. And except for death, unless you were the drunk driver or you were on pain medication and you killed someone, well, then that's something that you got to deal with. Which also goes along with you commit a crime. Look at Brittany Griner. But it was, I don't care. She got caught. Now she has to accept responsibility for what she did. Anything. Like I said, every single thing is in stages of grief. So you have to accept responsibility, which that kind of goes through when you get to the acceptance. A job loss. You could say, oh, they're terrible bosses. I hope they fail.
Hey, am I on?
Are you on? I don't know.
Yeah, I was just checking to see if my mic was working. Sorry.
Stage three is bargaining.
He just wanted us to know he was there.
Yeah.
Well, I could have just said hello, everybody.
That wouldn't have been easy.
They're like, oh, no, there goes the show.
The ratings just plummeted. Oh, no, we got tens and tens of views. So stage three is bargaining. And during grief, you know, you're going to feel vulnerable and helpless. And in those moments of intense emotions, it's not uncommon for you to look ways to regain control or want to feel like you can affect the outcome of an event. A lot of times you'll say, what if, or if only, like with, I guess they're using the whole breakup and divorce and the job loss and all that. For a breakup, oh, God, please come back, I promise. Do what?
I said people who don't normally pray start praying, and they're like, well, God, if you do this, then I'll do that. And, you know, I mean, so, yeah, bargaining or with themselves. I'll stop smoking, or I'll take better care of my child, or I'll do this, or I'll do that. You know, if only. You know, it's those if statements.
And the same thing with a job loss. If you get suspended or put on probation at work or whatever, you, oh, boss, I promise I won't be late anymore. I stopped calling in, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's everything's all, you know, you're bargaining with somebody.
Well, now if you get thrown
whether
in
yourself. You're either bargaining with yourself, God, or whoever it is that's involved into whatever.
I got on late, so are you talking about the stages of grieving?
Yes.
And is there five? Is that what the overview is?
Well, there is five, but now they have seven.
Seven.
They're saying actually seven.
So the third one you're on is bargaining. What were the first two? Denial?
Denial and anger.
Denial, anger, and bargaining. Okay, I'm caught up. Thank you.
Okay. depression is stage four. This stage can last forever. Like I said, you could bounce back and forth. But depression, especially when my first marriage ended, during the whole thing of it just, you know, falling into the toilet, that depression can last for a long time. You know, it will last as long as you keep it going. Yes, I know it's harder than what people – it is hard. But in that depression stage, you have to come to the realization is how long do you want to sit like this? Depression hurts. In the early stages of loss, you may be running from the emotions, trying to stay a step ahead of them. But by this point, however, you may be able to embrace and work through them in a more helpful manner. A lot of people isolate. They don't want to be around anyone. They sleep. They cry. They might eat every now and then. But you do have to get through it. So, and as far as for the breakup and divorce, why go on at all? What's the point? The job loss. Now, in this day and age, right now, the time we're in, there are so many freaking jobs. But here's the thing. People don't want to work. So you just have to get up, put your resume out there, applications out there, and just push along. Like I said, it's however long you want to stay in this stage. And hopefully you don't go backwards. Acceptance is stage five. It's not necessarily a happy thing, because you have to get, like in the death of a loved one, well, they're already gone, but you have to accept the fact that they're gone and not coming back.
I said you keep breaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry. But acceptance is—it just means you've accepted the whole outcome of that you can't change it, you can't fix it. Especially for a divorce or a breakup. Well, that person wasn't for me. I'm out of that toxic relationship. He or she was abusive. My kids are going to be happier. I'm going to be happier. So it's things like that where you have to get to that point. Especially the death of a loved one. You have to accept the fact that they're gone and they're not coming back. Are they in a better place? I hope so. I hope they are. So that's where you have to get. So the seven stages of grief, if this is, I've never heard of some of it. So the first stage, they say shock and denial. But basically it's the same five. They just added two. Denial is, it's a stage of disbelief, which is the same as the original stage one, denial. Pain and guilt. You may feel that the loss is unbearable and that you're making other people's lives harder because of your feelings and needs. Sorry.
When did they add these other two?
Huh?
When did they add these other two? The shock and the pain and guilt. Guilt would go in. That wouldn't that go in the? Why wouldn't that go in with the denial stage? Wouldn't I mean because you're feeling guilty that you know if somebody died and you didn't. Type of thing. Do you know what I mean?
I guess what they're saying with this guilt is you're being guilted because you can't get through this you know, you just, you're not accepting it. You're not, you know, and people are like, oh, get with the program, you know, that kind of thing. You're being guilted into.
Okay.
I'm guessing that's what this is. So anger and bargaining, it's already one of them, but they put these two together. You may lash out telling God or a higher power that you'll do anything they ask. You know, so they put those two together. Depression, that's already a stage. The upward turn, that's new. At this point, in the stages of grief, like anger and pain, have died down, and you've left in a more calm and relaxed state. So I guess these are kind of like in-between little transitions,
yeah.
I guess, is what they're looking at.
I'm curious as to where those stages came from and when.
But, yeah, and reconstruction and working through, you can begin to put pieces of your life back together and move forward. So those are what they've added. The other ones, they just kind of, you know, it's the extra, that's what they've always had. Acceptance and hope. So, yeah, they're about the same thing. So what is the hardest stage of grief to go through?
Wait, what was the question?
What's the hardest stage of grief to go through? It's actually a question for everybody. What's the, for you, what is the hardest stage?
That's kind of hard. I guess depression, probably. You know what I mean? I forget the words, but, you know.
Acceptance.
Like, it took years for me to realize, for my marriage, my second marriage, you know, I thought I was dealing with it well when we split up, but it actually, just as short ago as a few years, I realized I still had resentment. You know what I mean? So, and it was affecting me, and it wasn't until I don't know what the hell I was reading or doing something when it dawned on me, I still had that resentment. And so, like you were saying, you know, you bounce back and forth between those stages. Sometimes you don't know that you're in one of the stages, and they can last forever. You know, my first husband, he died many years, you know, in 95, and we were divorced at the time, but we were very close. Even now, today, there are those moments when I feel the grief, the loss that he's not here. So, I think, you know, and I get a little depressed. So that's why I said, I think that, for me, a little is probably the most difficult type of thing. I don't know if I'm explaining it well.
What about you, Phil?
I think acceptance.
You know, think about it. That is a hard stage, because it's just because you've accepted it doesn't mean it's a good thing.
Right.
No, I think it's. Losing a loved one or, you know, accepting that they're gone is very difficult. So a lot of times we make comments like, well, we'll see them again one day, or they're in a better place. And so do you actually accept that they're gone? Obviously, if you're saying things like that, no, you don't.
I mean,
and the thought of it,
like when my
way.
Father passed, you know, and this is why I have guilt with this, because he would call me incessantly, 8, 10, 12 times a day, the same conversations, because he didn't remember calling me. And I wouldn't answer the phone. I'd ignore it. And then I'd finally call him back. Oh, I'm sorry. I was busy. And after he passed, and it was a few years later that I had joined the Army. And it was like, I know he would have been proud, but I couldn't tell him. I couldn't, you know, oh, I'm going to call my dad later, but he's not there because he's gone. And so you know, that it, the acceptance is really hard. It's very difficult, especially depending on, like I said earlier, the age. If you lost a child for any reason or anything, it's still very hard. So is it possible to repeat the stages of grief? Of course. Like I said, you can bounce back and forth until you finally hit acceptance. And, you know, it all depends on you.
Well, I don't know, because like I was saying, you know, even after acceptance, you know, even after you accept that, you know, your divorce is final, that your loved one is dead and in a better place, even though you accept it and you're okay with it, decades later, you still can have those moments. A parent who loses a child, you never really accept that.
Okay, like the death of a loved one, birthday, holiday, if it's your spouse's anniversary, or if your parents, it's their anniversary. So all of those feelings come flooding back. Now, I even hate to say this, as time goes on, it'll get easier. No, it doesn't. Not really. It still hurts. You know, my grandmothers have been gone 20 years. I still feel it. Maybe do I break down and into this ugly cry? No. I could watch a movie that I think she would have loved.
Maybe not be the right word. Maybe mild faded. Faded, would that be a better word? I don't want to say easy because, like you said, it's still there, but it's the difference.
It does fade.
It's the difference between that open wound and that phantom pain type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that explain what? Yeah. So it's not necessarily.
Pain does fade.
It fades, but it's still there.
Yeah. So I did find something about the mood, the different emotions. There's six. Excuse me. There's actually six emotions that people have. Happiness, sadness, fear. Actually, it's five because I don't think disgust is a little bit much. Anger and surprise. Every other emotion, the guilt, shame, all of that, that's all man-made. We guilt people into feeling bad.
Right.
We shame them. We fat shame people. Diet shame, whatever.
What did you say to five again? I said, what did you
happiness,
say to five
sadness, again? Fear, anger, and surprise. I didn't think the surprise was really one of them.
That's
it's kind of like, okay, whatever. But,
Right.
And there's different types of emotions.
The variations thereof.
Yeah. And there is a scale. It's a diagram. It's a circle, and it has actually this diagram only has the four. The disgust and the surprise is not on there, and then it has the four. And then as you move farther out, it has different varying. For happiness, so it could have love. Giddiness. I mean, it's just different things that you want to call it. But these are the basic ones that people have. So emotions have an influence on how we live and interact with others. And at times it may seem like we're ruled by our emotions and the choices we make, the actions we take, and the perceptions we have are all influenced by the emotions we are given at any point. So psychologists have also tried to identify the different types of emotions that people experience. And a few different theories have emerged to categorize and explain the emotions that people feel. So during the 1970s, psychologist Paul Ekman identified six basic emotions. Like I said, I think it's really only the four, but who am I? that he suggested were universally experienced in all human cultures. So he later expanded his list of basic emotions to include such things as pride, shame, embarrassment, and excitement. And all of those have been created by man. And that's why when you go to the cognitive behavior therapy, they teach you how to see that, and you readjust your thinking. It does work. It takes a lot of work to do it. If you have to go through it, or if you want to go through cognitive behavior, you will be angry. Yes, you will. Absolutely angry at your counselor, and I threaten mine. I'm not doing this shit. I threw the book at her. I'm like, I'm not doing this crap. And she just looked at me. She's like, okay, now pick the book up, then go home and do your friggin' work. And I'm like, fine. And because she pushed me through it, and I did do it. I did do it. It's like, I can't remember how many weeks it is. I think it's 12 to 16 weeks, I believe. I can't remember. It's been a little over a year or so that I've gone through it. I think I still have the book on it. Psychologist Robert Plutchik put forth a wheel of emotions, and that's the wheel that I'm talking about, that works something like the color wheel. And emotions can be combined to form different feelings, just like your colors. Red and blue make purple, same thing. And you mix a little bit of this, a little bit of this, and then you get a fifth emotion. Exactly what I was talking about, what he said. So according to his theory, the more basic emotions act like something like building blocks. The more complex, sometimes mixed emotions are blending of these more basic ones. For example, basic emotions such as joy and trust can be combined to create love. You see, it's all, you know, what man has put together. Okay, so happiness. Of all the different types of emotions, happiness tends to be the one that people strive for the most. I'm never going to be happy. Blah, blah, blah. You know, there's various degrees of happiness. Look, any day above ground is a good day. I'm happy to still be alive. I may hurt every day, but I'm still alive. I take a look at some of my patients, and I will never complain again about this. It's like the, you know, so there's different, like I said, there's various stages of happiness of which you want to make it. Happiness is often defined as a pleasant emotional state that's characterized by feelings of contentment, joy, gratification, satisfaction, and well-being. So on that wheel, it would have happiness at the very in the middle, and then as you fan out, anything that makes you feel happy, that's how they put those other emotions on there. Research on happiness has increased significantly since the 60s within a number of disciplines, including the branch of psychology known as positive psychology. And this type of emotion is sometimes expressed in facial expressions, like smiling, body language, and your tone of voice, like an upbeat, pleasant way of speaking. If you see someone yelling, well, you're going to say, well, they're not very happy. It's just like when, I don't know if you guys do this, I do this whenever I see a kid screaming in the store, and you can tell the parent's frustrated, and I was just looking at the kid and go, well, somebody's not happy.
Yeah.
Sometimes the kids stop. Sometimes the kids will stop, but sometimes they don't care. They're just going to keep on screaming. But that's what, you know. While happiness is considered one of the basic human emotions, the things we think will create happiness tend to be heavily influenced by culture. I'll be happy if I'm skinny. I'll be happy if I have this color hair or this color eye. I'll be happy if I get this job. So light influences how we feel. A lot of people have long believed that happiness and health are connected. That's not true. I don't think it is. Just because I'm sick, like I have a lot of stomach problems, but it doesn't mean I can't be happy. I can. I need to be happy and miserable at the same time.
My thing is that I guess I look at it opposite. In other words, it's like when you're depressed, you fake being happy and eventually it's easy. My thing is that, as you know, laughter has proven to be a very good thing for health. You know, to keep stay healthy, because a positive attitude is a positive mind, positive body. You know, so in that respect, I think the two are related. I mean, that doesn't mean that you're not going to get sick because you're happy, but I think that if you stay happy and keep a positive attitude, that you...
Oh, no, I know.
That,
no,
yeah.
I get what you're saying, and that's what you're saying. But what I'm saying is, oh, I have a cold. But does that mean I'm not happy? No, it just means you're miserable because you're sick, but you can still be happy.
Right.
So it's good to, if your brain... can do that and say, you know, I may have this, but I'm still this. But that's how complex our brains are. Stress, anxiety, depression, and loneliness have been linked to things such as lowered immunity, increased inflammation, and decreased life expectancy, which is stress.
Right.
Now, for those pet lovers, I'm going to tell you this right now. If you have birds in your house, birds have been known to decrease your life expectancy.
Really?
Yes. You know why?
You mean like
the damn noise they make. The noise. It's a, sometimes it's, yeah, it's the noise.
And tularemia.
Single people. Huh?
And tularemia.
What's that?
I think it's a disease from birds.
Oh. Okay, well, that might be another reason. But no, that's what I've always heard, is that birds can decrease your lifespan. Being married, now I can't, people can argue about this one. And it can. People who are single don't live as long as married people, but it depends on who you're married to.
Right, there are exceptions, but I agree. And I actually read something on that about why. And, you know, that's why when you look at some of these couples, I worked up in the resort. I have couples in their 90s celebrating like their 75th wedding anniversary, or they're dancing and happy and, you know, married, and they're married. I mean, it's just, and it's because they're happy. Somebody explained this to me.
If you're in a relationship or marriage, and you're miserable all the time, it's no different than being single.
Right.
So, because the person you're with can drag you down. And
right.
I'm talking like narcissistic people that you're married. I'm talking abusive, cheaters, things like that. Or just all around miserable people.
No, I
and
agree. You marry. Hello?
What?
Are you up for numbers?
Marble Lake and NXT.
Our
Yes, sir.
Sadness is another type of emotion, often as a transient emotional. It's just characterized as feelings of disappointment, grief, hopelessness, disinterest, and dampened mood. Again, all of those other ones, it goes right behind sadness, but sadness is a natural emotion.
Hey, Colonel,
so
take your text message.
Natural. Huh?
Check your text message.
Oh, good. What did he say?
Check the text message on the phone.
Okay. Oh, okay. Ah, there it is. You found it. The wheel of... Yeah. That's
Thank
about
you.
What I had
yep.
for the cognitive behavior.
Cool.
Cool. I'm going to keep that. Yeah, it looks almost like there's a couple different wheels, but yeah, it pretty much looks like that.
Yeah, it's based on 8 emotions.
No, that was based on 8. I can't remember. But like guilt, like I was saying, guilt and shame, those aren't natural. Those are not natural emotions. Now, like anger, I guess disgust, there is varying degrees of anger. You could just be mad, angry, disgusted, repulsed. I mean, depending how far out you want to go, could depend on how, on the situation. You know
well,
what I'm saying?
You know, I heard her talking about using the I word, you know, in the anger analysis. But in anger analysis, we use the demand. What is the demand that's not being met? And can you change that demand to a preference? Example, I demand to get my paycheck on Friday, but if I don't, I get mad.
Oh, yeah,
I get mad when I don't get my paycheck. I demand it, but if I prefer to get my paycheck on Friday, I have a choice.
Isn't that part of the eyes, that eye thing? I know there's a whole lot of other stuff besides the eyes.
Yeah.
I know about all that shit is because of my sister and her kids.
Yep. Well, the hardest part about it is the self-analysis and determining what actually got you angry. And if you can figure out what got you angry, you can write it out in a sentence saying, using a word demand, I demand that this does not happen or I have no choice but to get angry. But if I prefer, change the word demand to prefer in the same sentence, then you get a choice. And so that's one thing we talk about when we're dealing with people with anger management issues. Problem with anger, it's a really, really dirty thing because anger, you will, if you don't let it out, if you don't scream or you don't cry or you don't let people know that you're angry, you don't let that anger out, you turn it in, it becomes the feeling of guilt, it becomes the feeling of depression if it goes on long enough. But ultimately, that anger is coming back out, and it may come out at the most inappropriate time.
I've found over the years, through experience, I mean, I'm not, you know, it's self-analysis and all that shit, but I have found if I get angry when I feel angry, it lasts a minute or two, it's over and done with, I feel better, and it doesn't happen as often. It used to be I'd hold it in. I wouldn't express it because I didn't want to hurt somebody's feelings. I didn't want to do this, that, or the other thing. So I would just not express my anger or my feeling. You know what I mean? And it would build up and eat at me. And when it finally did come out, it was awful. So you're right. You know, you can't bottle it up. It makes life so much easier and happier. You know, it's the same thing. If I'm sad, I pretend to be happy because what happens then is somebody tells me, you made my day with your smile, and then guess what? I actually feel better. I feel happy.
Careful,
you know,
with that.
Why?
Yeah.
Because you're seeking the gratitude of others, you're going to be disappointed if they don't say anything.
No! I'm not seeking the gratitude. I'm not doing it on purpose. I'm just, you know, I don't have a choice.
You're saying you're expressing happiness that you may not be happy, but you're trying to be happy, and then maybe somebody will come in and say, you made my day because you're such a happy person.
That's not why I'm doing it. But I'm just.
Oh,
I'm,
I misunderstood. Okay.
Yeah. No. I believe I don't want to be depressed. I want to be happy. So, you know, so I tell myself, you're happy, you know, you think positive, but eventually I'm happy. Sometimes somebody will come in and laugh at a joke I said, and they were depressed, and they were sad, and they tell me, you made my day, and that, yes, it is a gratification from another person, but you're right, because I don't want to be codependent. So you do have to be careful of that, but that's not why I'm doing it. I can make my own self happy by, you know, just, you know, not being depressed, but it's nice when somebody says that, do you know what I mean?
I know, yes.
Your short attention span also works too. You should forget why you're mad.
Yeah. You can't be angry anymore.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
But well, the one thing that, especially when I was in basic training in AIT, our drill sergeants and our cadre would be like, fake it till you make it, which
right.
you really can't do that. You really can't do that in the military. Yes, you can. It's like, I'm miserable, but I'm happy, you know, but you can't do that in life.
Right, you find
and you'll notice something. When you'll notice when you ask somebody, "How are you doing today?" You could see they're not feeling. You know, you could just see they're and they're fine. And when someone right. says, "I'm fine," you know they're not. And that's
right.
the one word that people use to cover up what's really wrong with them. I'm fine.
You know, it's an acronym, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Fine. Yeah.
That's true.
Hold on. Before I'm gonna look this up because this is the funniest thing. And I don't know about
fine.
You. Well, Lorna's not on.
Oh, is it? Fine means fucking insane, neurotic emotion.
Well, it's like that. You never go to bed angry. Don't go to bed angry or upset or mad or whatever. You know.
Don't drive angry.
Don't drive, yeah, definitely don't drive angry. And again, you know, I've learned this through experience. Yes, I've gone through therapy too, but it's mostly through experience that I've learned this because, you know, I go through depression. I am single. I don't really have friends. So you have to do self-care and mentally, you know, I mean, like I said, so I pretend when I'm sad. I pretend to be happy. I find things, I sing or whatever, and eventually I do feel better and the depression goes
okay.
away.
So
found it.
I just found this. I know there's really five things that women say. And for guys, okay, what's the first one? When women say these five things, it's like, oh, shit, what did I do now? Fine. Do whatever you want. Hold on. Nothing and whatever. Just run. Just don't ask. Just start counting back. Did I miss an anniversary? Did I miss an important date? Blah, 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 blah. Because you know when a woman says those things, forget it. You're just done.
Yep.
But there's
Don't
actually this says, huh?
Don't ask her if she wants cheese with the wine.
Oh, yeah. And if she's mad, don't give her a towel or something to wrap around her neck and say, well, now you're super mad. Because that's not cool either.
Don't put a cape on her.
Put a cape on her so she's super mad. And the other thing is, there's these videos that's on TikTok, and it's funny, is these younger guys, probably in their early 20s, They're like, dude, if your wife or girlfriend is angry at you, start laughing at her in the middle of an argument. Don't do it.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. It's funny because these guys are like, you're just trying to have somebody end up on the back of a milk carton. Not just that.
The life of your property is a lot longer.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't break your phone. They don't break your TV. You know. Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's one of the. I will say at Christmas time, and this was my ex-boyfriend, and he was a retard, but I guess I attract retards. I got so pissed at him, I picked up one of my Christmas houses, and I threw it on the ground in front of me. Shattered that bitch into 1,000 pieces. Well, he thought, he pushed me and pushed. You know, as some people, if you know what someone's buttons are, don't push them, because you don't know if they're going to snap and kill you the next minute. But anyway,
you don't know how much anger they're holding in from the previous 2 days either, right?
Exactly.
You let that anger all out at once, and that poor guy.
Well, he thought he did something by calling 911, and they showed up to the house, and he's like, she threw a house at me. And I'm like, no, I didn't. And so I showed the cop, and he goes, dude, I would just leave the house now. He's like, well, I got nowhere to go. He's like, you got a truck, go find a place to go. And the cop made him leave. Because he said one day. Yeah. So, that anger, man, you got to get that anger out. You can't hold it in because it's like they say, these mass shooters. Oh, my God. Or serial killers. I never would have thought he would have done that. He was so quiet. That's just it. It's the quiet ones.
Most of the serial killers, they say they were so nice, they were quiet, good neighbors, whatever.
Yeah.
The difference between, the difference between the neurotic and the psychotic?
No.
Neurotics build castles in the sky. Psychotics live in them.
That's funny.
True.
Fear is another emotion that's a natural. It's a powerful emotion that can also play on an important role in survival, the fight or flight. Now,
it's also an acronym.
It can be paralyzing, believe it or not, and it could be anything. Now, we discussed this a while ago, and I do remember somebody sending me 2 ridiculous memes on fear. I thought they were funny. Ha ha. I have an irrational fear of dark basements and my bed. I will not hang my feet or my arms over my bed. I am 51 years old. And I will not to this day hang my feet over the edge of the bed because of movies like Pet Cemetery. Huh?
I said, what do you think? There's a monster under the bed?
No. Not necessarily a monster, but, some psycho child with a scalpel and going to cut your Achilles tendon for hanging your foot over the edge of the bed. I don't know. It's just because I've seen so many scary movies growing up. It's an irrational fear, okay? And you wouldn't want to.
No, I just trying to clarify why.
Huh?
I said, no, I get it. I was just trying to clarify.
No, see, and so what I do now is when I get up in the morning or when I go to bed, I will deliberately force myself to stand next to my bed and not move. It's because I'm trying to get that out of my head. There is something under my damn bed. And so, and the same thing, now listen, with a pitch black basement, I will not go in a pitch black basement unless I have a gun and a flashlight. And yet again, too many scary movies. But what's actually, somebody was staying in our basement at our other house. Because
I remember you saying something about that.
Yeah, and so, yes, that is not an irrational fear because somebody actually was when it was freezing and they snuck in the basement because we didn't lock the outside door. We locked the inside door. Well, now our basement here is out. It's a storm shelter outside of the house. But yeah, I will not. I would keep the inside door open, and I would jump up those three steps to turn that light out. I'm telling you.
At nighttime, I check the back of my car before I get in it.
You know, it's
even
like
even if it's locked, I check the back of my car.
But get
you
this,
you should do that. I recommend everyone do that. Check the back of your car when you get in and when you get out, because you might forget your kid back there.
Yeah,
well,
God forbid you do that.
You ever see those short horror movies? They're not movies. They're like 15 or 20 minute things. You know, the woman goes out to get the cigarettes or whatever, and she runs into the store and she runs out, you know, and she gets in her car and then there's a killer in the back seat.
Yeah.
But that is a thing, though.
But that's true, but you should always you should always check your back seat before you get into your vehicle and before you exit your vehicle.
Yeah, no, you're
just
right.
A habit.
Yeah, you're right.
Some vehicles are actually now producing a warning system when you turn the vehicle off to check the back seat.
I don't know that. Parents have to be reminded to check the back seat for their kids.
Yeah. Well,
oh, yeah.
You know, in today's world of hustle and bustle. Well, how many times have you ran out to your car and forgot your keys?
I'm not disagreeing with you. It's definitely something you should do. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's
sometimes a lot easier to forget something than you could imagine, especially something as important as a child. I mean, I had assumed my kid was in the back seat, and I drove off from the mall, and he was still in the mall. There was one missing.
Okay, I will say, yes, I left my oldest child in the car, but of course she was only like 2 weeks old, and I hadn't used to have her yet. Yes, I ran into the store. Actually, both me and her father ran in the store, and I'm like, "Where's Ashley?" He's like, "What do you mean? I thought you had her." No. And we were literally parked in front of the store. So it was not even a minute. So one time scarred me for life to always check the back seat. And that's, like, you know.
Me and my ex-wife did that. Me and my ex-wife. My wife and I did that one time, too. And I thought she had gotten the child, and she thought I had gotten the child. And ultimately, I got blamed for it. And she was 100%. She was 100% right.
But yeah, I mean, with fear, you could have fear for anything. It could be a fear of losing job, losing a relationship, money, whatever. So fear, and like you had explained before, you have to look at it. Is it an irrational fear? Yes, I have an irrational fear. Okay. But there's always the fear of losing a job. That's a very rational fear. But are you doing a good job?
That's
where you have to look at it and balance it out.
All fears, whether rational or irrational, are self-demanded, in the sense that the acronym for fear is a false event appearing real. Your mind is telling you to have or to be scared of something that actually hasn't occurred. Meaning you have a fear of putting your feet on the ground or hanging them over the bed because of something that you've seen in the movie. So your mind is telling you that could actually happen to you, but it's a false event that appears real to you in your mind.
Oh, yeah.
And that
and
fear,
you know what's
that
weird
fear,
about it?
If so, fear is not a real emotion. If you think about it, it causes anxiety. And it also causes paranoia, and those become very, very higher level levels of psychosis. That are,
wait,
so if
wait,
you can't deal with fear,
fear
if you can't, no, it's not. Fear's not real.
No, that's how it's saying. Those are emotions that are created by people.
Yes.
Right, but what would fear fall under?
Anxiety.
But anxiety is not real either.
No, but it's still a psychosis, and it is the result of fear. So anxiety and fear are almost interchangeable. You become nervous and worried about a procedure that you're going to go through. For example, you're going to go get your blood drawn, and you have a fear of needles.
Uh-huh.
But you've done it 100 times and you've survived it every single time, but you still maintain that anxiety about getting your blood drawn. But it's a fear.
The same thing with surgery. The same thing with having surgery.
Like,
there's that fear of the unknown.
That's right.
Yeah,
your mind is thinking
that.
And then those disclaimers those doctors make you and the waivers they make you sign before surgery adds to it.
Don't know.
Oh yeah.
But fear and anxiety are interchangeable, and you might even say paranoia is interchangeable with that as well. But
yeah,
fear
to an extent,
is,
yeah.
Anything that you are afraid of, which causes
the
you anxiety, anything that you're afraid of, which causes you anxiety, is something your mind is tricking you. For example, if I turn on the light, I'm going to get shocked. I'm afraid of getting shocked, so I'm fearing that. I'm afraid of somebody being in the back seat. I have fear about somebody being in the back seat, so I always look to make sure to calm my fears. But, you know, it's not illogical. Don't get me wrong. It's not illogical, but it is created in your mind, fear is.
You know, another one that's not illogical, it's a possibility. If you've ever seen any of the Final Destination movies, have this unnerving fear of being behind a logging truck. Why? If you don't know, go watch the movie. You'll find
right,
out.
True. Yep.
But it's not just logging trucks. It's the ones with the pipes, the PVC pipes,
right.
Lead pipes.
Sure.
Yeah, long pipes.
Yep. But are you afraid of the Chinese rocket landing on your house?
What?
You know all the space debris from the Chinese rockets? They're falling to Earth. Like there's 4 tons of material that's falling to Earth.
Oh, I thought those were the Australian ones that were falling. Or the Indian ones from India.
There was the Chinese. I think they were the Chinese. That's what I read. And are you afraid of the solar flares that might take out all of our communication and electronics? You know,
I'm not afraid of them, no, because I'm prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's nothing you can do about it. So there's a level of acceptance, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's
the whole thing.
To deal with the fear.
And you have to
deal with fear. To deal with fear, you have to have serenity, or you have to have a level of acceptance. For example,
no, you have a point. You have a point. I'm afraid. Say that none of that stuff scares. I don't want to say scare. Worry is worry a fear or concern? I'm concerned that it might happen, but I'm not afraid. I mean, if it happens, oh well.
And you know, most fear is personal safety. That's the thing. Is that's really the source of the fear is. Something or someone hurting you.
I'm not, when I say this, do not get mad. I don't want anyone to get mad and blow up and all get on up for COVID has made some irrational fear in a lot of people.
Yeah.
They're absolutely petrified.
Of any vaccine
I get
now. People don't want to get the flu vaccine. Now they don't want to get shingles vaccine. Now they don't want to get pneumococcal vaccine. I got people that don't even want to get the tetanus boosters now because they are so fear of what vaccines and what's in them.
Yeah, and
well, not only that, but I'm talking about COVID itself. Well, I'm talking about COVID itself. Yes, mm-hmm. it's killed a lot of people, but we have to look at how and why it killed those people. Now, it's been around forever. We've got other illnesses. Do you see people acting irrational about pneumonia? No. Or influenza A and B? No.
And they killed people too.
They were when it was new.
They still kill people.
And COVID is
true. Influenza and pneumonia.
Yeah, and COVID is still killing people, and the dying people are on the rise again, especially in my area. I don't know why, but it's still killing people. But when an illness first comes out and there's not much known about it, it's the fear of not knowing that causes panic. But now it's been around for a long time.
When the Zika virus, West Nile, Zika, it lasted, a year and was gone?
We still have it. We still have West Nile, Zika, chikungunya, and dengue.
Yeah,
I live in South Texas.
But it's like,
The fear. I mean, I agree, even though, I'll never get the COVID vaccine, even though I have doubts about changes that they're making to other vaccines. I am not against vaccines, and I think it's a shame that people have become afraid of all of them, including ones like tetanus or whatever. Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100% on that. I'm not going to disagree with you.
That is a little bit ridiculous.
On the other hand, wait a minute. People have become too dependent on them. They have stopped taking care of their health. They have stopped eating properly. They have stopped taking vitamins because they are becoming too dependent on these vaccines. And that's just as bad as being afraid of taking the vaccine. Do you know what I mean? So, you should be, as a physician's assistant, so you're supposed to be treating everything, not just, when you treat people, you don't just tell them, we'll take the vaccine and you're good to go. Go about your business. Don't worry about anything else.
Nope, that's not how I do that, though. See, a vaccine is a real personal
choice. That's not how you do that.
Yeah, to me, it's a real personal choice. And you explain the pros and the cons and let the patient make the decision.
But again,
if a patient already has their mind set up, you could talk to your blue in the face and
it's
a socialized ignorance.
The question is, whether they get the vaccine or not doesn't matter. Whether they get the vaccine or not, they still should be taking better care of themselves, and we're not. As a society, we are not taking care of our bodies. Whether we get vaccinated or not, that's what I'm trying to say, Phil. Somebody gets a vaccine, great. That's fine, especially, like you said, tetanus. I mean, definitely. Or even the COVID vaccine, whatever my personal opinion may be about it, doesn't matter. If somebody gets the COVID vaccine, okay, but they still need to take care of themselves. They can't just rely on the vaccine. If it's a smallpox vaccine or the flu vaccine, whatever it is, you can't just rely on the vaccine.
I tend to agree with you too in some regards that I believe that a body's natural immunity is important too, and without having exposure to some of those germs in your lifetime, then you're not going to have a strong immune system. It's going to make it weaker for other things which may come in. So we used to play out. Yes.
About the shingles vaccine.
The new one. Get the new one, not the old one. Get the new one.
All right,
not the very one.
I didn't know there was a new one. I thought it was an older one.
Much better than the original one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been updated. The original one was 90%. This new one's 99%.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's your question?
I think you did.
I don't know. I was just wondering, because I've been seeing all these commercials. Are you over 50? Have you had chicken pox? And and to not want to get shingles. And I'm thinking, well, they never even asked me if I wanted to get the shingles vaccine. I just didn't know. See, I got the chickenpox vaccine way back when, and I still got the damn chickenpox. So I'm like,
Well, it's really important for those who have had chickenpox, and at most of that age group we're targeting were the ones that did not have the varicella vaccine available for them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of fairly new, I guess. It came out probably 40, 50 years ago. But those like above 50 years old, they didn't have that vaccine, so a lot of us got chickenpox, which means the virus is in us, and it's living in our nerve roots, and it will come out one day. Yeah. For those who
so
got
do you have
the vaccine,
to be exposed? Do you have
no,
to be exposed to somebody else's shingles to get it?
No.
Okay.
It lives in you. Once you've had chickenpox,
yeah.
the virus goes dormant in your
yeah.
nervous system. And
my sister,
on
she's getting the shingles vaccine. Gotcha. She wants to get it.
Mm-hmm. So if you had chickenpox, you might want to consider getting it, because if
yep.
you ever seen anybody with shingles, it's not pleasant.
Well, I know
no,
I
my,
didn't get it.
My cousin.
Did. I was never around people. I never got chickenpox. And I know that because my mom, she assured me I didn't have it, because she was, you know, my sister and brother got it, and they both are getting the shingles shot. They both plan on getting the shot.
Smart
I think
move.
My sister may have already gotten it. And they're getting it. If I would have had, I would. But like I said, my mother assured me, you know, like I said, that I didn't have it, so I don't need to worry about the shingles.
My recommendation to you is at your next office visit, ask your doctor to do a varicella antibody titer. See if you have
What's
immunity.
That?
They draw your blood and they see if you have the antibodies for varicella, which is the virus that causes chickenpox and causes, well, shingles, they call it herpes zoster. Varicella
right.
zoster is chickenpox, but there's still a zoster virus. So you want to have them check you for the zoster antibodies to see if you have immunity towards that virus. If you've never had it and you have immunity from maybe a vaccine that you received, great. But if you don't have immunity to it, then you may want to
yeah.
consider getting the shingles vaccine. Talk to
yeah,
your doctor
yeah,
about
I,
that.
I don't know if I got a vaccine or not. I just know what my mother told me. But yeah, no, if I go to a doctor again, I'll ask them for that test.
See,
but I don't have insurance.
My grandfather was 72 years old when he got chickenpox, and it almost killed him.
Oh, wow.
Because he was 72. He went his whole
yep.
life, and one of the grandkids gave him chickenpox, and it wasn't
me. Oh, my God, that poor man. He must have
suffered. I was 25 when I got chickenpox.
Well, they say
and
the older you are, isn't it the worse it is?
Yes.
Well, if you get the initial
yes.
chicken pox, it's worse. But the shingles, you know, is a lot more worse because, like I said, the virus lives in your nerve roots, and when it sheds, it's the worst burning neuralgia you're ever gonna experience. It
mm-hmm.
burns. It's painful, and it's because it's in your
yeah.
nerves where. Those little blisters that you see on the surface of the skin, they're also underneath your skin in your nerves, and they're popping left and right, and they're doing nerve damage. Post-herpetic neuralgia can last for a long time. So,
my cousin got him on his head.
And it can go to your optic nerve, and you can go blind. It's very,
yeah.
very that's a severe shingles when it affects the optic nerve, so that... So you don't want to get shingles, especially the older you get, because it can put you in the hospital, and the pain is so debilitating, and it can last for 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, I know people that have it. And once you get it, there's no treatment, and the vaccine, it's too late for the vaccine.
Yeah, but there are some tests that they can do to tell you if you,
When I got chickenpox, they gave me an antiviral. I forgot which one they gave me. And it, because they said it helps lessen the symptoms.
Yeah, acyclovir normally.
Yeah. And then all I did for 2 weeks, I kid you not, was I'd watch a movie. I'd lay on the couch, took an oatmeal bath, got up, watched a movie, took a nap. And that was what I did for 2 weeks every day. I thought I was going to die.
Yeah, I was.
And I was 25.
Poison ivy. Highly allergic to poison ivy as a kid. So, and
yeah, me
I mean,
too.
the wind blew in the wrong direction, and I could get it. And so I used to suffer a lot. Yeah, from that.
Do you want me to give you guys information on monkeypox? Are you guys? Have you been up on that?
Sure.
Okay. And even though I know it's being spread by homosexuals, I do know anybody can get it.
Yeah, it's through contact, basically. Through contact. Okay, so monkeypox is a pox virus, meaning that it has a blister-like rash, vesicles, they call them. You'll get blisters. But to differentiate monkeypox from other blister-type rashes such as shingles or chickenpox, you will have like a fever, maybe like a little upper respiratory cold viral fever, influenza-like illness. Well, that fever will break, and within a few days in your mouth, you're going to get some blisters in your mouth and your tongue.
Right.
And then those blisters are going to spread. You're going to see blisters on your palms.
Is that why they have it all over their faces?
I guess. But it starts in the mouth and your tongue. You get a blister in your mouth, your tongue, and they're burned. They're painful. They're not painless.
People have been making some nice comments about why they have monkeypox all over their face.
Well, if it comes out of the mouth and the tongue, then you probably get it on the face. And as it moves down the body, there's only so many rashes that affects the palms of your hands and the soles of your feet. Most rashes don't affect those areas. But there's a couple that will get on your palms, and there's a couple that will get on the soles of your feet. And this is one of them.
Wow.
And it's gonna be in different stages. It's gonna start out as a little red dot. It's gonna develop into like a little pimple. Then it's gonna become a little blister. It's gonna pop, and then it's gonna scab over and then dry up.
No. I am very much ashamed to say that I've serviced a couple of homosexual men at my one job, and I immediately sanitized my hands afterwards.
You don't need to do that, Mom.
And that's profiling, and I really feel ashamed for doing it. But right now, they're the only ones that are spreading it.
That's not true.
It. 99% of the people that have it are homosexual men, or children who are associated with homosexual men. Unless the numbers have changed.
It's changed.
When?
So
yeah.
Right now, the virus started. Now, let me clear this up. Of the people that were reporting it, the virus apparently started in the homosexual male population. And from there, spread to the rest of society. But there was a lot of places.
I'm not blaming them.
But the other thing that they may not be aware of, it was associated men who would travel. So a man went to, for example, another country, and that man happened to have sex with another man, and they decided to report it.
Right.
And now it's associated as a homosexual disease, and it's spreading amongst that population. But in that country, how many of the did they actually report to the CDC. A lot of countries don't report to the CDC because of political reasons. And so the only things that we knew about, the CDC knew about, was that there were homosexual men involved in the first cases that were reported. So it became very common among the homosexual population.
Straight people weren't reporting it?
I am saying it was either misdiagnosed or they were not reporting it to the CDC. Like the doctors weren't reporting it or they weren't.
What?
And not, well, in different countries they have different rules, kiddo. You know, you might be in a little third world community and there's some, you go over there and visit them like you're on a mission and you pick up something and you go back and the doctor in the mission just says, oh man, it's, you got chicken pox. Or you got something else. They don't know what it is, something new. And so it's misdiagnosed, not necessarily reported. And if it's actually widespread, rampant in a certain part of the world that does not routinely report to the CDC, you're not going to know about it. So the epidemiology of that illness is only what we know that has been reported. So it was initially reported by homosexual men. That's the thing. That's what I'm trying to tell you. That illness is spread through contact.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter who it is. You touch somebody.
No, I agree. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I agree with you. Yes. But the thing is that because that's why I started my comment that I was bad. I'm ashamed of myself that I profiled these people because I know better that they're not the only ones that could pass it.
That's true. Don't be ashamed of yourself because that feeling that you had is a very natural feeling. It's a fear. It's a false event appearing real, and you recognize that. That's good.
Because I know. But see, here's another thing. The one job I have, I am constantly dealing with the illegal migrants that have been bused to my area. Not just Hispanic ones,
too.
But ones from Africa and Haiti and everything. And I know for a fact that, you know, and I don't care. I don't resent them. It's not their fault. I got a fucked up government. But my point is here they carry diseases too. They don't have the access to vaccines and shit that we do. They could be spreading shit just as much as homosexuals could spread monkeypox. So that's why
you don't have to worry about that because you're vaccinated, Mom.
Vaccinated with what? My point was that I prefaced my sentence why that I was ashamed of myself that I profiled these people and I didn't profile anybody else.
Yeah.
But
there's nothing wrong with trying to maintain a certain amount of hygiene. Nothing wrong with that.
No.
And if you maintain that hygiene regularly, then whether you're saying I wash my hands because they were homosexuals or I just wash my hands up routinely because I'm trying to stay clean.
I have to admit my one manager got me out of the habit of licking my fingers in order to open up a plastic bag.
That's a good habit. Yeah. Don't put your fingers in your mouth. Don't touch your face.
If you're gonna put your fingers
somewhere else, wash your hands.
Ha ha ha! But I'm 58 years old. It's just as a habit. It never occurred to me. It's not something that I think of. You know, counting money or opening the plastic bags. When we were kids, we didn't think about this shit. You made a peanut butter and jelly. I mean, you didn't always wash your hands before making your peanut butter and jelly sandwich when you came out, you know, came in from playing outside.
Oh, hell no, we ate dirt.
Think about dudes. We ate dirt.
But see,
so.
Now you were just saying earlier, though, go ahead and keep licking your hands. If you do get something, it's going to make your immune system stronger.
Right. That's
you know, people
now
walk,
I
people
ate
walk around.
And bugs as a kid. I don't want to do
people
it as
walk
an adult.
Around bare, people walk around barefoot and then they get hookworms through their feet, especially children.
What? Wait.
Yeah.
I can get worms in my feet? What?
Yeah, you walk around
barefoot in the dirt,
especially outside.
No, I've never had a hookworm in my foot. I had a leech on my leg once when I went in a river.
Do you ever have pinworms?
No, I don't know what a pinworm is. No, I don't want pinworms. I work around barefoot. I've even stepped in dog shit barefoot.
Another group of people that get they look at them harshly is people with HIV.
Yeah. I agree.
They're like, I'm not touching that person. Look, HIV is not a contact thing. You have to share a lot of spit or, you know, sex or whatever. And I've had a nurse who refused to help a patient. Refused because she had hepatitis that she got from medication.
Dirty needles.
Got it from her medication.
From medication.
White, the most famous case of HIV ever. He got it from blood.
Who?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there's illnesses that people look at, you know, like, oh my God, they have. Yeah, but
they're
why they have it? And you're not going to get it. It's not like Hootie for touching them. You're not going to get it.
You know, it's just ignorance, Mom. You know that. All you got to do if you're educated and you're in the medical field, you know, you want to practice universal precautions to prevent possibility of blood-to-blood contact. You know, that's where it spreads. But do you know the levels of... Levels of HIV is almost undetectable with the new medications that are out now.
I know.
Yeah. But I still want to, you know, honestly, if you have HIV and you're on any of those medications where you could barely detect it, do you really want to take that chance of spreading it to somebody else?
There are people
who don't give a shit. People are married.
Yeah.
I know.
And then some of them are heterosexual. I am not, I don't condemn people because of their illnesses. If somebody needs help, I'm going to help them. Am I going to sanitize the shit out of my hands afterwards if I couldn't find any gloves? Yes. But I'll be damned if I'm going to let somebody suffer. You know what I mean? Because I might catch something. How can people be that? That's cruel.
So the medications they have people HIV on, right? It says we're pretty much undetectable. Does that mean they can spread it or they can't spread it?
Well, that means without the medication, if the level does rise up, the really concern with HIV is the diminishment of the immune system through the T cells.
Yeah.
Once they get a low T cell count because of the virus is actually destroying the T cells, then they get a secondary infection that usually kills them. It's not that the virus itself that kills the person. It's usually like a pneumonia because the immune system has gotten so weak because they don't have a defense because their T cell count is so low. So by keeping the virus load to non-detectable levels allows your body to build up its natural immunity. You'll have your T cells back. And people with HIV are living long, healthy lives. Some are even having offspring without the virus.
Yes.
But that's weird.
I think they have to have a cesarean, though, right?
They have to have a cesarean? No. It all depends on the OB-GYN on what they believe. Yeah, so if the OB-GYN is very confident and comfortable with working around people with HIV, then he'll let them do cesarean or he'll let them do vaginal. It doesn't matter.
Well, I thought there was one that it's safer for the baby to do with Caesarean. I forget which one it is. I mean, I don't. I mean, I
it's gestational diabetes when they're a large baby. A lot of times, gestational diabetes will cause a baby to grow extra large, and a lot of those patients will end up having cesarean sections because they're going to have a difficult time.
No, vaginal herpes or something like that. That once it passes through this birth canal, the baby could get.
If it's active.
Is it herpes? I don't know what it is.
Okay.
If it's active. If they just have scars and it's dormant, then yeah, you can have that.
Chlamydia and
gonorrhea are the same thing, but then they treat them before they even have birth. Mm-hmm. So they put on antibiotics and cure to that. Mm-hmm. So it's just when a patient shows up in labor and they have chlamydia, then that's a problem.
I just think it's sad that people are afraid to help people for fear of catching something.
It's
so,
just ignorance,
Mom. In New Jersey.
It's ignorant.
In New Jersey, that councilwoman hit that guy on the bicycle and then took off, and which was a shame because she didn't do anything illegal until she left the scene of an accident. But do you know that nobody helped? Nobody went to help him after she hit him.
Are you a nurse?
This councilwoman in New Jersey, it went viral. I have no idea. Yeah, this councilwoman was driving, and it went viral. But at any rate, she hit this guy on a bike. He ran a red light. He actually was in the wrong. He was wrong. She hit him, and instead of stopping, she didn't even slow down. She kept going, which is a crime.
I saw that. Yeah.
There were people there. Nobody went to help him. I don't know. Were they afraid that he might be contagious? I don't know, but nobody went to help him. That's sad.
What was wrong with him?
Besides
being stupid.
Yeah. Well, he was wrong. I mean, you know. I mean, he was okay. He was able to get up. I mean, he was hurt, but not, you know, severely. But the point is that nobody ran to help him. I mean, look at the people that get raped on the woman that got raped on the subway. Nobody ran to help her. Or what about the people that have a heart attack and lay on the ground, and instead of people running to help them, they run to rob them? What the fuck?
It's a bystander effect. They think, someone else will do it, and they won't help. Or people are still happy, they'll sue them if they don't, if they do something wrong, you know.
Plus,
like that one woman.
There's, what is it called, the Nightingale, or there's the Good Samaritan.
Good Samaritan.
Yeah, that's fine. But no, you're right. It is, they're expecting someone else to go do it, or they're too busy holding their phone and filming it. Or maybe they just don't feel like they are qualified to help out somebody like that. But
even if you can't do anything to actually help.
You can call 911. You can call 911, but then once again, you might think somebody else has already called them.
I've called 911 a couple of times and been told that somebody already called them, and I'm like, okay, well, good. I'm glad
Well, good. Exactly. Yep. But you know,
I'd rather they get
too many times.
The police even told me that.
Yeah, and then there's also going to be some people who have warrants and they're criminals, and they don't want to do anything that's going to draw any undue attention to them, so they're going to stand back in the shadows and not do anything as well.
There's a lot of reasons,
and especially on the East Coast, you know, the New York, the New Jersey, the Philadelphia, the big cities and places like that, people just don't give a fuck about other people. Because
that's what's wrong with society today. People are too self-absorbed into themselves. Ooh, let's get that camera out. Let's record it instead of doing something about it.
I think it's because of social media and COVID and things like that, people are not very social in person anymore. They have a hard time with person-to-person relationships. So there's a lot of different reasons for a lot of different things. And you're right, it's sad. But no matter what, it is sad. It is sad. One human being won't go help out another human being in need.
Yeah, my boss at the store, the retail store, said that he loves watching me interact with the customers because, you know, it just cheers them up, I guess. I don't know. But because I'm just so always nice.
No, I'm
on
the radio show. I'll be in a minute. Here you go. Give Mom her pretzel and her cigarette. And yours, the other bag's yours. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, guys. I'm got distracted.
No, that's all right. You're with your kids. They got to come first.
Yeah. Wow. So where was I? Oh, yeah. Okay. We're talking about. Yeah.
I think it's sad the way that society has degraded so far. You know, it's like I don't even reckon. And Phil, the thing is that when I was a kid, it was different. You know, I was a kid. It wasn't that long ago.
How old are you, Mom?
58.
58?
Yes.
That's not very old.
That's what I just got through saying. I'm not really that old. I mean, I'm older than most of you, but I'm not that old. And I grew up on Long Island. I mean, you know, and New York City. I mean, we used to go to New York City all the time. I mean, and we would go watch the planes land. There was no security system. You parked your car and you went in and you went to the windows and you watched the planes take off and land.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was growing up on the East Coast, the only thing is there was a lot of salt and pepper issues. Yeah, I mean the racism between blacks and whites. And
well, my mom married a black man, so I know what it was. And this is in the 70s, so I know what it was. I agree.
And we were poor. And we were poor, and you know, didn't have that. You know, the kids, now the parents and the grandparents are different, but the kids didn't have that. You know, initially they didn't have that racism thing in mind, but man,
no,
I got beat up everywhere I went just for being white.
Yeah.
And that sucked. That's what I hated about the East Coast. And then all of a sudden, because I was getting my ass kicked all the time, I did develop a stereotype. When I see a group of black kids around, there's danger and I need to get the fuck out of here. Until I went to the military and found out we all bled green. Yeah. Love you guys.
Sorry about it.
Love you too, bro. This is a great show. Kimberly, thank you. Phil.
No
Maria.
Problem.
Hey, Maria, you don't have to be single forever. You're beautiful.
Thank you.
God bless America. God bless our children, first responders, our veterans, our military.
And you, Bobby.
God bless
and God bless the Defenders 7. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, guys.
Good night.